you don't need a law degree to know that when folks are telling you that you're going to hurt someone, you're going to hurt a group, and you do it anyway, that raises a lot of questions that need to be explained. And I think there's going to be a reckoning on that front.
State lawmakers have approved new political maps. Now a time-honored North Carolina question. Just how long will they last? This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Welcome. Redistricting is complete, at least the legislative portion of the process. New congressional and legislative districts were finalized last week. They're expected to increase Republican gains on Capitol Hill and at the General Assembly in Raleigh. Legal challenges, yes, plural, have already been filed, and we'll discuss one of the claims, as well as the likelihood it gets expedited, in a bit.
From the Democrats' and voting rights advocates' perspectives, I mean, this is exactly what they expected.
First, let's turn to my colleague Rusty Jacobs for some analysis on the new lines. Rusty has been reporting on this process for months, and we've dedicated the pod largely to this fundamentally important, if not wonky, topic for a few weeks now. And remember, gerrymandered maps and legal challenges felt like a foregone conclusion. So I was curious if anything that happened last week struck Rusty as surprising.
They expected Republicans to use their majority to draw lines that give them the most advantage when it comes to state legislative and congressional districts. And as far as the congressional district map is concerned, looking at least a 10-4 split in favor of the GOP in terms of congressional seats. Now we've got 14 seats. And on the state legislative maps for the House and the Senate, you see a clear chance for Republicans to solidify and even expand their majorities in those chambers.
And just remind us briefly, Republicans already have control of both chambers of the General Assembly. Expanding their majorities at the state level is or isn't important. Why?
Important in terms of their potential to override vetoes from a governor of the other party. You got to remember, in 2018, Democrats won enough seats not to overcome a Republican majority, but to turn a veto-proof majority into a simple majority. And Governor Cooper's successfully vetoed, and Democrats have successfully upheld those vetoes a lot of times between 2018 and now.
And just for a little bit of more nuanced context, there also is the possibility of overriding a veto of your own party. We didn't see it a whole lot, but we saw it occasionally with former Governor Pat McCrory a few years back. Okay, you followed this process closely for weeks. Want to get some reaction from you, some analysis. Let's start with congressional districts, the federal map. After passage of the new 14 seats or districts last week, what did strike you?
I'll start with the one that has been the subject of an ongoing parlor game. Will he or won't he? There is a district that has Cleveland County. That's the home county of House Speaker Tim Moore, State Representative Tim Moore. And it has led to a lot of speculation about whether he has political ambitions beyond the North Carolina General Assembly. And he has deflected questions about whether he plans a congressional run. But there is a district that would certainly help him achieve that goal. And so while he says he's focused on negotiating a possible state budget and was focused on redistricting, that question will continue to draw a lot of attention, at least from the Capitol Press Corps. Now, other issues. Did Republicans manipulate boundaries in a way to give them excessive partisan advantage? I'll point to one district that has drawn a lot of attention. There is a new district that would go from Greensboro, liberal, blue, left-leaning Greensboro in Guilford County, reaches across the northern part of the state all the way to the western border with Tennessee, and has a little teardrop drawn into it that encompasses the residents of Virginia Fox, long-term serving Republican representative from the western part of the state. Democrats will tell you there is not a lot of common interest between the communities in the western part of that new district and the ones in Greensboro. Communities of interest, preserving them, keeping them together in district is supposedly one of the criteria that Republicans adopted and applied in this redistricting process. But Democrats say, look at the way Guilford County has been carved up. Pricey Harrison, long-term Democratic representative from Guilford County in the state house, has said Republicans purposely separated Greensboro from its Piedmont Triad neighbors, High Point, Winston-Salem, and Forsyth County, to dilute the voting power of those largely Black communities of interest to favor Republicans and to hurt Democrats.
This map splits it up very, very significantly in ways that are splitting up the large African American populations and communities of interest, and it confounds me.
A couple of brief contextual points. Virginia Fox has long served a district including her mountain residence in Banner Elk. That's near Boone in Watauga County. It extends down 421 into Winston-Salem. The criticisms about communities of interest, or lack thereof, are not new. However, this time, Winston, and all of Forsyth County for that matter, is included in a different district that dips southwest, almost looking like a soup ladle, to scoop up a constituency that helps to preserve a seat for Congressman Patrick McHenry. So the would-be Fox district for next year runs along the Virginia border and dips down to splice off a portion of Greensboro and Guilford County.
That is a new district that seems to favor Republicans and will make it very hard for sitting Democratic incumbent Kathy Manning to run and win re-election. So that is a district that a lot of critics and people challenging that congressional map in courts will point to.
As for Manning's predicament, it's reminiscent of Brad Miller, Heath Shuler, and Mark Walker, a politician of one party who finds him or herself in a seat no longer favorable. It remains to be seen if Manning runs in a Republican-leaning district, hangs it up for now, or takes her campaign east to try to fill the shoes of David Price. So that's some analysis on the congressional map, these 14 districts, which, if they hold, if the courts allow, will be in play for U.S. House seats. Let's transition to the General Assembly. 50 state Senate seats, 120 state House seats, just a friendly reminder. Coming out of those new districts, what stands out, if anything, to you?
Again, I'm going to have to point to the arguments from Democrats that Republicans are slicing and dicing and carving areas to their benefit, not keeping in mind the criteria that they adopted in terms of preserving communities of interest. I'm going to point to two state Senate districts, for example, districts 1 and 2. It's the northeastern corner of the state. One of those districts has an incumbent from the Democratic Party, Ernestine Bazemore, Black woman from the area, and the adjacent district has Bob Steinberg, a Republican. I was talking to Senator Dan Blue, Democratic leader in the state Senate, about those districts, and he says they're drawn to crack or divide the Black communities in those neighboring districts in a way that dilutes their voting power.
There are all kinds of things that you would have as criteria that you want to use. And unless you're going to rank order them so that this one is of paramount importance, it leaves you room to just arbitrarily say that this is the criteria when I draw this district, but let you still maneuver to create gerrymandered districts, gerrymandered for partisan preference.
Another state Senate district in question also lies in the northeast of the state, in the coastal plains. It straddles I-95 and includes counties with predominantly Black populations. This district is currently held by Toby Fitch, who is also Black. And these new districts will result in the loss of Black representation. So says Allison Riggs.
Those two districts no longer exist. There no longer is an ability for Black voters to elect in those areas. And so right off the bat, we know two out of the three Black senators in northeastern North Carolina are gone.
Riggs has been a litigating thorn in the side of Republican lawmakers for more than a decade. She's co-executive director for programs and chief counsel for voting rights at the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, a progressive-leaning nonprofit. And for a point of context, she represented Republican plaintiffs back in 2009 in a case challenging maps drawn by Democrats some 20 years ago.
I've made lots of Democratic enemies in my career. And I think we're at a moment of reckoning now where we need to understand and talk about more specifically the intersection between race and politics and how partisan gerrymandering acts to the detriment of voters of color in the South, where the Southern strategy has been effective. This was a historic purposeful attempt to make one party the party of voters of color, and then to be able to shield racial discrimination by saying we're just discriminating against a political party. And that doesn't mean that Democrats aren't guilty of partisan gerrymandering or even racial discrimination at various points. Like I said, I've sued Republicans or defended Republican maps. But we need to understand that you can't separate the political from the racial in the South. And one of the things that we hope to do representing our clients is tell that story.
You said that the way these maps are drawn, there's not going to be a black senator from state senator from Northeastern North Carolina. Let me push back a little bit. Is that fair? Do we know that for a fact, or is it possible that the Democratic constituents could still elect a black person to that body?
We've done racially polarized voting analyses, and others have as well. I know that Common Cause North Carolina submitted to the legislature racially polarized voting for Senator Fitch's district as revised, and Senator Bazemore's district as revised. As I understand it, those analyses showed definitively that not only is there racially polarized voting, but it is legally significant. And it would ensure that that black candidates lose elections in those districts. It's about as sure as you can possibly be using reconstituted election results, but the legislature was on notice about that.
For decades, North Carolina lawmakers had to follow something called preclearance when drawing districts. It arrived out of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and sought to limit racial gerrymandering and encourage black representation in Congress. In 2013, when part of the VRA was rolled back by the U.S. Supreme Court, preclearance went away. However, Riggs says racial discrimination within districts remains against the law.
Still illegal because of the Constitution. The idea that the state constitution has an equal protection guarantee, the federal constitution has an equal protection guarantee. You can bring a case under either, but you cannot discriminate on the basis of race under our state equal protection guarantees, and you can't draw race-based districts without a compelling governmental interest under the state constitution.
But even before Riggs wants to make an argument about the districts, she wants to be heard on the process which was used during this year's redistricting. She says that while state lawmakers claim to have not used any racial data, they were supposed to, actually required to do so. And Riggs cites a state Supreme Court case from 20 years ago that laid out a process future legislatures were supposed to follow, a process that she says lawmakers ultimately ignored.
Yeah, so there were two cases in the last cycle in state courts. The ones most important are Stevenson 1 and Stevenson 2. Stevenson v. Bartlett was the full title. In Stevenson 2, the North Carolina Supreme Court said, here is how you comply with these provisions in the state constitution. And they literally listed out steps, like bullet point numbered steps. So it is categorically and just legally impossible to draw any districts that may be compelled by the Voting Rights Act if you, one, refuse to look at any racial data, or two, refuse to do any racially polarized voting studies. So they are, as a matter of law, unable and non-compliant with the first step articulated by the North Carolina Supreme Court in Stevenson because of the process that they engaged in.
When Riggs eventually argues in the courts, it will follow a different dispute about the maps that played out in the legislature. let's turn back to Rusty, who, along with being a reporter, is also a former assistant district attorney. So, plenty of divisiveness and partisan rancor because it's politics and you can't go to the bathroom without that in 2021, but maybe you can. We heard some criticism from the Republicans directed at the Democrats during this process in the last couple of weeks, particularly on the House side, the North Carolina House side. The Democrats didn't participate in map drawing. And if they wanted to be more involved, they should have taken a longer seat at the literal, not even proverbial, table or desk. What did you make of that criticism? The Democrats didn't really participate.
To what end? I mean, honestly, and I heard this from Robert Reeves, the Democratic leader in the state house. He talked about this in floor debate on the maps when they were ultimately adopted. And he said, look, we know the score. I'm paraphrasing here. If Democrats had come in with maps, would they have been adopted by a Republican majority legislature? The answer is no, clearly. Because when Democrats offered amendments in the debate process, they were shot down one after the other. So that doesn't give any indication that had Democrats come in and drawn alternative maps, they would have had any real shot of passage. This is all ending up where everybody knew it was. Republicans are going to draw maps that gives them the greatest benefit. They're going to go as close to the line as they can and leave it to the courts to determine if any constitutional boundaries have been crossed. That's what people expected. That's what's happening.
So, Rusty, it was inevitable that legal challenges, plural, were to follow the passage of these maps. We've already seen two. You and I are having a conversation on Monday morning. I do anticipate additional legal challenges in the days, weeks, maybe months ahead. Size up for us how the legal challenge that is forthcoming was ostensibly forecasted during some of these debates.
I think you're going to see a debate on the application of redistricting criteria. The criteria shows up in every single conversation. Destin Hall, state representative, chairman of the House Redistricting Committee, has talked about this historic process, historic for its transparency, and that the legislature voluntarily adopted and applied these criteria. But that's important. Let's dig into that. In 2019, the Republican-led legislature had to redraw maps yet again, but this time they were under the threat that had they not done it on their own, a state court that said they had drawn maps with extreme partisan advantage, unconstitutional partisan advantage, they would have intervened and drawn the maps themselves. So the Republicans did the best they could for themselves in the most palatable way for the courts. And what they got were the last maps that we saw for the 2020 elections yielded an 8-5 split in the congressional delegation, still favoring the Republicans, but gave the Democrats more seats. But this time around, they are not under threat of a court intervening. I mean, maybe one of the cases we're seeing filed now will end up in a redraw. But right now, the Republicans voluntarily applied criteria, but did so without that sword, that judicial sword hanging over them. The maps they drew are the maps that are going into effect now. So as much as Republicans say they voluntarily applied these criteria, nobody was watching how they applied them.
Just when the voting maps land before a judge or judges remains to be seen. However, there are some more firm dates on the calendar. The 2022 March primary is now less than 4 months away, slated for March 8th, and the candidate filing period opens in less than a month, December 6th. With that deadline looming, I asked Allison Riggs if it's possible for a judicial review to be expedited, bumped up to the top of the list.
I mean, it's always a possibility. I can tell you that in our case, we are seeking expedited review and have asked for a hearing next week to consider delaying the primaries to give us a chance to adjudicate our claims. Counsel for Legislative Defendants today informed the court that they don't have anyone available next week. I do think if we get the primaries delayed from March to May, there is time for us to obtain meaningful judicial review of these serious claims and get relief.
Indulge me in
another analogy. You're standing in the checkout line at the grocery store with a cart full of food. It's piled high. Everything you need in preparation for the big meal later this month. Then, all of a sudden, someone else with an even larger mountain of food rolls up and asks if they can cut you. Now, generally, I'm not good with this. Presume you aren't either. It's poor form. But what if the person says they're blocking the parking lot entrance and they've got to get through so you and everyone else can get out? It would seem that the legal challenge to districts is, on some level, the loaded grocery cart, the really big one. With due respect to cases waiting in the judicial queue, this one might be more encompassing. Whether the maps are legal or illegal, it behooves the people of North Carolina to have an answer sooner rather than years later. Then again, even if the cart or case moves through quickly, there could be another boisterous shopper or plaintiff not too far behind. This episode of the Politics Podcast was produced by Charlie Shelton Ormond. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Do us a favor, please, rate and review this program wherever it is that you downloaded it from, and then share it with a colleague, family member, or friend. Thanks for listening.